Welcome to a brand new episode of Guelph Politicast. I'm Adam A. Donaldson, the writer to webmaster of Guelph Politico. I will keep the intro short this time because I think this podcast is really interesting. I talked to David J. Knight, who is a local archaeologist and artist, and he's put together a new show called Hidden Histories, Guelph's Cinema Past, which you can see starting Saturday at Ed Video's Gallery. Along with that, there's a walking tour you can take, which is also on Saturday. The opening of the exhibition, the official reception, is Saturday at 2:30. But before that, at 2, you can take a walking tour through downtown and see some of the locations of the various silent movie houses that used to be downtown, or at least see the spots where they used to be. There's a portion of this podcast later on where I see a couple of the spots with David, and he shares some of that history and some of those stories, and it's really fascinating. At least it's fascinating to me, so I hope you'll listen to the end and get all that trivia. David J. Knight is also the author of a couple of books, or he's worked on a couple of books through the publication studio in Guelph. One is called Sound Guelph, which is about alternative music in Guelph from the late 70s to the late 90s. He's also edited a republication of The Omen, which is a book written by John Galt, otherwise known as the founder of Guelph, and he's going to talk about both those books in the podcast as well. So, without further ado, I think we'll just get right into it. I caught up with David J. Knight at the gallery at Ed Video Media Arts Center. What appealed to you about putting a show together about Guelph's old movie houses? That's a pretty esoteric topic, I think, if you're looking for put together an art show.
Yeah, no, I just got interested in the aspect of Guelph having a movie audience that was going to see films for 105 years now, since 1908, with the first Nickelodeons. And as a social aspect of Guelph's heritage and the moving media, of which the Festival of the Moving Media is now celebrating, I thought it was a very interesting thing to look back at what the Guelph audience had been looking at, and it's fascinating what you come across.
Perhaps just for definition's sake, what is the difference between a Nickelodeon and a movie in terms of how modern audiences might understand those
So Nickelodeon
terms?
Is basically as small as a booth to a room that can seat maybe 35 people, where you spend one nickel, 5 cents, in a small theater. Odeon is Greek for small theater. And so there's all these little places popping up across Canada and the world. And you spent a nickel and you saw a 10-minute little film of Coney Island.
So it's kind of the Netflix of its time.
Yeah. But not Nickelodeon this time.
Yeah, no, there's a channel, Nickelodeon, where it's Rugrats and stuff. How do you start with research on something like this? The museum, the library, I guess, are good resources.
Yeah, we have a fantastic archive in Guelph at the Guelph Public Library, and all of the old newspapers, including the Mercury, are on microfilm, and it's open to the public, and a fascinating resource, all archives are, and that one is particularly good. And through spending months with those archives, going backwards and forwards to hone down on the opening days and closing days of particular cinemas, I finally have it all in wrap.
What some of the things have you learned that you perhaps didn't know going in, and in terms of Guelph's movie-going history?
I didn't realize it was this old. 1908 is fairly old, but the big surprises were the characters who were living in Guelph, one of which was a Guelphite, Mr. Alan Simpson, and the other two characters who came to Guelph, and they are major figures in Canadian cinema history, one being John C. Green, who was known as Belsaz the Magician, or the Merry Wizard, and the other was David Howard McMullen. And between these three characters, the Nickelodeons, the vaudevillian concert halls that became cinema, film-showing cinemas, from 1908 to about 1933 when Macmillan died. Absolutely crucial period for cinema in Canada. And I was amazed to read in the obituary of David Howard Macmillan that he was the first person in Ontario, if not Canada, to own his own kinemascope. And it's just possible that this Guelph person was making films and showing films as well. And that's particularly interesting for the history of Canadian cinema.
A kinescope is like a movie camera, basically.
It is, but it also shows it. It's like it's half a camera, half a projector. So you can shoot a film and then you can show it.
Huh.
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, perhaps you can talk about some of the highlights of the show and maybe what's involved. There's a component here at the Ed Video Gallery. There's a walking tour component. There's something at the Civic Museum, too.
Yeah, there's a little exhibition at the Guelph Civic Museum in the foyer. And we were very pleased and honored to make contact with Bill Cardinal, who used to be a projectionist at the Odeon, the Palace, the Mustang. And his father had been a projectionist as well. And he and his father retrieved a silent projector from the castle when it burned down in 1927. And that projector still works, and it's in the exhibition at the museum right now. I've been doing a couple of... Well, I've done one walking tour, and the next one is Saturday, November 2nd. At 2 o'clock outside 33 Cardinal Street, which is the first Nickelodeon called The Wonderland. So the walking tour is a lot of fun for people, and we're just hoping for better weather this time. And then we have this wonderful big exhibition in Ed Video, in the gallery of Ed Video. That's put up by the Festival of Moving Media, and it's part of their festival. And that's going up, and that will open also on November 2nd, I guess after the walking tour, and that is a lot of prints from the Daily Mercury, and those articles pertaining to the cinemas and the openings.
Well, one of the things I wanted to talk to you about in beyond this exhibition is your involvement in P.S. Guelph, the print studio, and you have a couple of books coming out. And one of them is Sound Guelph, which is another Guelph history book, but it's an exhaustive... And I know the launch was a couple of weeks ago and it was very successful, but it's an exhaustive look at Guelph's music scene, so that's another...
Well, it's an exhaustive look at Guelph's alternative music scene.
Fair enough. But, you know, thinking about the alternative music scene in Guelph, that's a huge topic, too, so...
I had to limit myself to when it began, basically in the 1970s, to 2000.
Mm-hmm.
I acknowledge that there's alternative music going on in Guelph after 2000, and I incorporate some of that, but there was a lot of alternative music going on in Guelph, especially in the 80s and 90s. And Sound Guelph came out, and... just uploading the music to SoundCloud, over 66 songs, and it's a niche market, but it's a really cool niche market.
Mm-hmm. What kind of research was involved in that in terms of like collecting the music? Because I imagine some of that's pretty hard to find given the materials, the media of the time.
Yeah, I have the advantage of being a former member of a band of Guelph called A Single Voice. I'm still known as A Single Voice. And sometimes we reform. So I know all the old band members from other bands as well, like Maggot Fodder and other bands. And the personal archives of some of those band members are exquisite. And the book is dedicated to three gentlemen who were at the core of the Guelph alternative scene. Al Clark, who was bassist of Maggot Fodder and vocalist for Celtic Blue. Adrian Dunham, who was saxophonist and just personality with several bands. And Chris Dowling, who was a great bassist with many of the bands that are in the book. And through their passing, the family members and the band members and everybody else just came on board and gave me the whole archive. So it was, in some respects, smooth sailing, but there was a lot of material. Mm-hmm. But then the book is 361 pages, so.
You said you stopped the discussion in the book at the year 2000. What's maybe the difference in the alternative music scene from 2000 till today, in your estimation?
Well, one thing I should start off with is that the other major points of the archives that I accessed that were given to me freely were the archives of CFRU, Ed Video Media Arts Centre, and the Ontarion. And you see, the Ontarion, the writers for the Ontarion, students, would come and write about the alternative scene of Guelph. And those writers helped shape that, as well as the DJs, the early DJs of CFRU, Mike Walmsley and Paul Ruta and many other people. Now, back to your question. Which was?
About, in terms of the difference between the alternative music scene in Guelph from 2000 to today.
Well, to speak honestly, I only got back to Guelph in 2011. So I'm told that the Heffernan Bridge was a good hangout in the late 90s and early 2000s for a new kind of music and a new way of listening to music and loitering and conglomerating as youth. and there's a lot of DJ activity now. It's almost superseded live act. And what was funny about being in a band in the 80s in Guelph was it was bloody hard to play anywhere. Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of us had to go off to the back door in Kitchener or to Toronto. But there were a few places in Guelph, including Ed Video, the Albion, the Woodshed, and the University. So I think the big shift in music technology is always going to shape the new music and how it's how every alternative music quickly becomes a mainstream. Although I must say, there's a lot of music that's in Sound Guelph and in the recordings that you can hear that remains alternative and fresh and dangerous and dirty. And there's no slickness of production. There's some good production, but the values of slick production are, I suppose, post-2000.
Mm. Well, going to completely opposite side of post-2000, the other book you're working on is a publication of The Omen, which was written by our city's founder, John Gould. And I find this fascinating that Guelph has so many tremendous literary connections and home of so many great authors. From what I understand, this is the first time a John Gould book has been published in John Gould's town.
We believe so. Yeah, it's a wonderful thing. You know, it's quite a Halloween season sort of thing to do. but you know, I've been interested in John Galt's character as an artist who then, you know, through his job, founds Guelph and also Goderich. And I know that John Galt is predominantly known for his Scottish vernacular novels, but there are all these other novels that are earlier and a little later that are true Gothic novels. And the idea that, he was one of the first people to write a life of Lord Byron in 1830. And he had traveled with Byron in the Mediterranean. And Byron was a huge fan, obviously, of the poet Dante. And obviously Dante was protected just before he died by the White Guelphs in Italy, in Ravenna. So I thought, well, isn't that interesting that Galt may have, on some deep level, named this city in honor of such a romantic ideal and a Gothic ideal, too.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people don't even think of John Galt as a writer at all. They just think of the guy who founded Guelph and, quote-unquote, mixed up the layout for Guelph and Goderich, which is why we have the crazy man town. But that's kind of like the only popularized legend around the man who's
cool. Yeah, so yeah, I think that a nice push for this book, The Omen, through Publication Studio Guelph, is to start promoting Galt in Guelph and internationally again. He's quite an interesting artist.
What is the Omen about? I mean, I take it it's not about, you know, Damien and Son of the Devil and...
No, but it's gothic. It's a horror in some respects in that it's like Oedipus Rex. It tickles the idea of incest. And it's about encountering one's past life and future life in the present and getting into a lot of trouble about it. And the way it's told is very introspective, but it's full of omens that bespeak the future and the past coalescing in the present. And it was hard going at the time. It was published in 1825, 2 years before he founded Guelph. And it had a mixed reception. And in this edition, what I've done is include two contemporary reviews of the book. One we know is penned by Sir Walter Scott, and he loved it, and he likens it to it belongs to the lineage of Walpole and the Castle of Otranto. And there's some Faustian Goethe things about his work as well. Mm-hmm. The other reviewer hated it. He thought, you can't touch that topic, you know, that's just so unseemly. Now, of course, in 1825, it was quite cutting-edge stuff. In a way, John Galt was an alternative artist of Guelph.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. You've kind of set yourself up. I don't know if you see yourself this way, but you've certainly set yourself up as a preeminent historian of Guelph. I'm not sure if you'd maybe preeminent, maybe a bit strong. But, you've done things like you've covered the Petrie building downtown and helped guide an effort to recognize that. And, these various projects. What is it about that Guelph history you find so fascinating and keeps you digging for more?
By training, I'm an archaeologist, and I have, you know, 2 decades of experience in the UK and other countries in Europe. And I came back in 2011 to my hometown, Guelph, and basically transferring my skills to my local setting. But I've always been interested in the topography of Guelph, the history of Guelph, what Guelph means through John Galt. I wrote a little thing about Matthew Bell as well for my Guelph, for the Mercury. And the early days of Guelph are fascinating, and I'm also, as an archaeologist, interested in what was here before this sort of European mimicry of a European city was founded here in the woods. there's plenty of other history here, but I remember as a kid at Waverly Drive School, we used to have a traveling museum roll through the schools, and they had, you know, worked flint and all kinds of nice artifacts from the nations here, and so there's a much deeper story here as well, and I'm sure that John Galt knew and recognized that as well.
Well, maybe you can give us some spoilers on maybe what you're looking towards next, making your next history project.
Well, I like the cinema thing is very fascinating. I'm interested in continuing republishing new editions of Galt's work for not just the audience of Guelph, but of Ontario, Canada, Scotland, internationally. And I'm still involved academically with my own 6th century Italian acoustics.
Well, at this point, we're going to get out of the gallery here, and we're going to go out in the street, so the listeners at home will hear a bit of a sound difference. But we're going to take a look at we're going to take a look at some of these places that the show is going to be talking about. Okay, so we are in the parking lot off Baker Street, between Baker Street and Wyndham. This is where the family thrift store used to be, and Wyndham Arts. So what was here before that, David?
Okay, I suppose these addresses are 58 to 64 Wyndham Street North, and we're looking at the Old Wellington Hotel, and behind us is Ed Video. And this new parking lot actually has got rid of two of the old cinemas. And so if you're standing from Wyndham Street, on your left you will see a wall, and there's a flashing board that actually, that's the scar of the Apollo cinema.
Okay.
And so the Apollo was directly opposite the Wellington Hotel, and right beside it was the castle. And McMullen, as I was telling you before, McMullen and Simpson owned both. The Apollo went for many years. In fact, the Apollo went from 1910 to 1914 as a music hall, mm-hmm. and then from 1914 to 1922 it was a theater. And even when it was a music hall, they were showing films such as St. Elmo in 1910, which was screened on April Fool's Day for some reason. And so during the war years, they got a gold fiber screen. And so by 1914, they were showing Lucille Love, The Girl of Mystery, and some Mutton Jeff, you know, things like that. Mm-hmm. And they wanted to expand, I suppose, and they built the castle right next door. And the castle did last a little while during a really important era of film, mm-hmm. and that was the silent film. And the castle was from 1922 to 1928, and it was destroyed by fire. Now, we think the fire was caused by the kind of film they were using at the time.
Right.
And the booth went up, and the rest of the building went up. And we've got images from the Mercury of the day, the morning after that fire, that are going to be in the exhibition. And so it was in the castle, at the back of this parking lot, underneath, where Bill Cardinale and his father found the silent projector. There was a second one there, and he believes it might still be under there.
Buried under that parking space right there.
There you go. There you go, yeah. When they made the parking space, I remember coming here, and I did take some, before I knew these were cinemas, mm-hmm. because I'm an archaeologist, I take pictures of sections and whatnot, and I don't know, I can't remember how deep they went, but possibly not deep enough to find the second mysterious silent projector, so it could still well be under there. Obviously, beside the castle, when it burned, it was right next door to the Capitol, which had been Griffin's, which had been the Royal Opera House. And then in later years, it became the Odeon, which is now the Guelph Concert Theatre.
Mm-hmm.
So actually, the Odeon, as well as the Royal, which is now called the Palace, confusingly, are the only buildings that stand in downtown Guelph, which were once cinemas.
I did notice, I was at, I think it was Elements in Kitchener, I was there once, and it has a very similar layout to the Guelph Music Concert Theater, which is also now a club, once a movie house. Is this a common thing, movie houses, or music clubs transformed from movie houses?
Yeah, I think that is a trend. I think a lot of the old cinemas, they're expensive to heat now, and you've got to have basically someone who's willing to do it up and make lots of constant money out of it. Movie-going is a tricky business now. All we have downtown, and it's great that we have it, is the Bookshelf. And the Bookshelf started in 1988 with Jean de Florette on July 15th. And so they're part of our history as well. But yeah, if you think about it, the only cinemas now are the Bookshelf, and then you've got all the galaxies. But at one time, you had 7 different cinemas in downtown Guelph, not all operating at the same time, but either they burned or they were transformed into something else, or they were completely demolished. Or as you say, like across Canada, across Ontario, a lot of these cinemas then became clubs, restaurants, something with constant turnover. One fascinating thing is, I after doing quite a bit of the research, I got the idea. I wonder if there was anybody in Guelph, of Guelph, who became an actor.
Yeah. And other than Nev Campbell, I assume.
Well, yeah, before that. And turns out in the 1920s, there was a competition. Famous players had a competition in Toronto, mm-hmm. and there was an entry from Guelph. And she got her picture in the paper, Miss Christie, I think her name was.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, there's no follow-up story in the next few weeks of the Mercury, so I don't know what happened to her.
Mm-hmm.
We're looking at the big parking lot, which is now being resurfaced.
Yeah.
And we're actually looking at the siding of the funny-shaped building that was re-sided last summer, I think, or this summer.
Yeah, it was last summer. And I miss all that great graffiti that was there.
I know. And at the other end is Sun Sun Restaurant. So right. The whole building was a cinema called The Regent. John C. Green was the manager of The Regent from 1917 to 1921. And 1919, he put something in the Mercury, which is in the exhibition, complaining about other people putting the price of admission up.
Ooh. How much did it go up by?
Well, they went up to 50 cents, my God. And he wanted to remain at 25 cents, I think. That's the gist of the story.
75 cents for 3D.
Yeah, well, yeah. Just do something on stage in vaudevillian act. But and so he got really annoyed with everybody in town. I don't think he was probably a difficult character, but a real showman. And when the Capitol got called the Capitol up on Wyndham, mm-hmm. He started to name the Regent Capitol.
Uh-huh.
And then sometimes put an ad in the Mercury as the Capitol. So that was kind of confusing. But in about 1923, he gave up the whole business and he went back to his magic act and he left Guelph. So he's not a Guelphite, but he's certainly a major figure in Canadian cinema history, and he's living here at a real seminal time, you know?
Why did he segue from magic to begin with?
It was part of vaudevillian magic acts to show the magic of the moving image, and this was the new magic that you've got pictures that move.
Mm-hmm.
It was a really magical time for the moving image, and film had this enthralling, engrossing hold on everyone. You know, huge audiences went to these Nickelodeons and cinemas. Huge. But there you go.
You know, obviously people at home can't see this, but it does have that same slant that you were talking about over on the Baker Street lot, that anytime you see a slant like that, you're probably looking at an old movie house.
Well, yeah, except that across the street you got Acker's, which has the slant as well, but it's not a movie theater.
But it's why some people think that.
Yeah. It looks like a continuation. It looks like, mm-hmm. actually, if you're a very big person and very tall, you'd have a good skateboard ramp up there across the street. But
was that the Acker's meant to mirror this? Or like, was this built?
It's a good question. I don't know. Possibly. I mean, I think Acker's has been there from like 1921 at least.
Mm-hmm.
It's just possible that there was. How would you put that? That there was some reciprocal design going on. City planning? My God, did they have city planning? Yeah, something like that going on, perhaps. Yeah. This is the Colosseum. You'd never know it now. Because
Lutherwood here.
Yeah.
And how long ago was that?
So the Colosseum was a Nickelodeon from 1908 to 1910. It didn't have any adverts in the Mercury or the advertiser, so the only reason you know about it is through the obituary of David Howard McMullen, who owned it with the other Nickelodeon called the Wonderland. And 22 Wyndham Street now is now the employment center, Lutherwood.
Mm-hmm.
And when they destroyed or replaced, we shall say, the block
right.
from the Poutine Place to
the Bank
of Canada Trust.
Yeah,
that whole section is now new, and mm-hmm. they got rid of 22 Wyndham Street, which was the Coliseum.
Well, you can see the difference right where Pierre Poutine ends and Lutherwood begins here.
Yeah, and that's a tricky one. You know, there's hardly any photographs of the Coliseum. I've seen one photograph of cadets walking up Wyndham Street in like 1909, and you can just see the beginning of COL on an arch above this building. But other than that, I haven't seen any photographs of the Colosseum. So if anybody has one, let us know.
It is interesting to think of these movie palaces. You know, some of the dates are open, like the Colosseum, 1908 to 1910.
Yeah.
You know, sort of coming and going. We don't typically associate, a lot of businesses are like that, obviously, the nature of business. But we don't typically associate movie theaters as kind of fly-by-night operations now.
Well, they weren't really fly-by-night, but they could see, like, from 1908 to 1910, already internationally, business people could see that this was a moneymaker. And instead of locking yourself into a Nickelodeon where you had to charge a nickel, you set up a new place that can charge more than a nickel and not call it a Nickelodeon. And in the Nickelodeons, they'd only show short little films of weddings and beaches and newsreels and things like that. Stories started to be made, and longer films, better projectors, screens, so they started to make these new cinemas. So the old Nickelodeons, they didn't last long, because the business potential for charging more was quickly realized. Yeah,
they couldn't just change the name and charge a dime.
Nah, Dimelodeon? I don't know. No, I don't think that would have worked. Quarterodeon. No. Dollarodeon. These days, what is it these days?
Yeah, that's true.
You know, so yeah, no, it was at the very beginning of movie going, and they could tell that this was big business. So this is the King Edward Hotel.
Okay.
Oh, this opposite the old City Hall, which looked a bit different. But
yeah.
I mean, the King Edward was there.
Right.
David Howard McMullen and Belsaz the Magician turned up in town and stayed in the King Edward Hotel in 1908. And they stayed up there until they had their job, and then they lived in their respective cinemas. And just down from the King Edward Hotel, so I'm looking at Planet Bean downtown. I'm on the corner of Wyndham Street and Carden. Mm-hmm. And just down from Planet Bean is number 54, which I think is empty at the moment, but it used to be a tobacconist. And the tobacconist was Alan Simpson.
Mm-hmm.
So David McMullen turns up here, is staying in a room in the King Eddie,
mm-hmm.
and goes down to get his tobacco and goes into business with him. Let's start a Nickelodeon. And that's
just like that.
McMullen and Simpson. That's how business was done in 1908. And so down at 33 Carden Street was the first Nickelodeon that they opened,
mm-hmm.
along with the Coliseum, which we were just at. And that was called the Wonderland.
Mm-hmm. In terms, you've documented a lot of downtown. In terms of like the layout, in terms of like the buildings, how much has changed since 100 years ago?
Well, quite a lot. I mean, Wolfong got rid of most of it.
Right.
But the layout has not changed at all until they put up the old Quebec Street center there, that mall.
Mm-hmm.
That got rid of old Quebec Street and another little street.
Mm-hmm.
But the layout's pretty much, and obviously Northumberland used to come straight through to Wilson.
Oh, did it?
That underpass was made in 1955,
okay.
Something like that.
Huh.
So there's 33.
Okay, that's...
So basically, in the 50s, it was just taken apart.
Right.
But what's really interesting, because we don't have any ads for what was being shown at the Coliseum, we do have what was shown at the Wonderland.
Mm-hmm.
And the first film was Romeo and Juliet, September 1st, 1908. And by November 10th, you had a little film, which is presumed lost now, called When Women Vote.
Advisory against, was it?
I don't know. And then, by 1909, December 20th, he's showing Dr. Wright's Invention. So, mm-hmm. Flight. So, I mean, this was a way for people to see what was going on, new inventions, news from around the world, newsreels and things. The story of flight. That whole story is being seen by, you know, Guelph audience in 1908.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I think that's fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
And we're right opposite where, well, we're still on Market Square, but it's nothing like that how it used to be. It used to actually be a market.
Yeah.
And you can imagine every weekend when people came to Guelph as a market town, their entertainment was right across the street.
Mm-hmm.
It was facing them. There was the hotels. You had a Nickelodeon here, and then around the corner. And it was the way, it was quite a vibrant place.
We don't think in terms of design, like having that kind of centralization anymore. I mean, it's talked about a lot, walkable communities and stuff, but this truly was walkable. Everything you needed in one block.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. And there was all kinds of different kinds of cultural nodes that could be accessed. And it was all interwoven within, really, a very walkable space.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, with the end of the last war until... And it's still going on. When you start to have the spread into the suburbia, the creation of suburbia,
mm-hmm.
You take away... from the core, the cultural focus, and that becomes a running halo where you require a car.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, if this was Amsterdam, you wouldn't have cars downtown, but it would be packed with cultural things that are all interwoven and, exciting.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be a very vibrant and packed place. I think Guelph has that potential, but you just got to get rid of the cars.
Well, we wish you good luck with that goal. Well, I would love to keep talking to you all day, but obviously we need to save some stuff for when people want to take the walking tour on Saturday. And if people want to learn more about this exhibition or whatever it is, anything you're doing, where can they find more information?
Well, the Festival of Moving Media has built an app. So if you go to their website, the app link is on there, and if you pick up a program for this year's festival, the app address is on there, and please do come along to the exhibition at Ed Video on Saturday, and go see the one at the museum that's still up until the middle of January, and get re-engage yourself as a Guelph movie audience.
Well, like I said, fascinating. Thank you, David J. Knight, for your time today.
Thank you. Cheers.
And once again, that was David J. Knight, the curator of Hidden Histories, Guelph Cinema's Past. And that show is carrying on for the most of the month of November. You can look at edvideo.org for all those details. And there's links to all the different projects, the Festival of Moving Media, the Hidden Histories app. All those are available on the page on Politico, where this podcast is hosted. So you can look up all that information there. And that will do it for this episode of Guelph Politicast. Next time, I will talk to Guelph Civic League President Andy Best, and that'll be a very enlightening conversation, I think, once we're looking towards the 2014 municipal election and the different issues that are going to come into play and voter engagement, and it's going to be a really good conversation, so I hope you come back for the next episode of Guelph Politicast. In the meantime, thanks for listening. I'm Adam A. Donaldson. Good night and good luck.